All right, welcome back to Third String Podcast, yet another great night to podcast. I'm joined, as always, by my brilliant and charming co-host, Pete LeCleed. Pete, how are you doing?
I'm feeling better now that you said brilliant, my man. I've been waiting like 6 months for that, so I appreciate it.
You finally earned the label of brilliant.
I'm doing well on this end, so I can finally announce to podcast land a bit of big news you and I have been discussing recently.
But, yes.
My family and I are officially on our way to start cheering for the Vegas Golden Knights in person. We have learned that we will be moving to beautiful and fabulous Las Vegas here in a couple weeks. So come mid-June, early July, I will be coming to you from Sin City. So
it's a pretty short time frame.
Yeah, it's going to be here quick. So it's going to be aggressive for the family and I. As you guys know, we have some young kids and a big dog, so quite the epic road trip coming up. So it'll be an interesting few weeks for us. But we're going from the Great White North, where, no kidding, it was 34 degrees this morning, to
wow,
to Sin City, where it's always hot. So we're excited, but it'll be interesting for us with this show. I mean, we're both Midwest guys right now. Obviously, we both grew up on the East Coast, but I'm switching to the Pacific time zone, so I think it'll be good. A little different perspective. I don't stay up and watch a lot of the West Coast, NL West, AL West games. I struggle to stay awake for the fourth quarter of Monday Night Football. So
you're gonna get ready for some Pac-12 after dark out there.
Yeah, man. And College Game Day is gonna be on at like 7 in the morning for me. I mean, that makes it a lot harder to have a beer with College Game Day. I don't know what I'm going to do.
Hey, there's no rule against a beer at 7 a.m. I just want to point
that
out.
I like your style.
No beer,
I like
your style. Rule. You know,
I'm
kind of split on how I feel about the Pacific time zone and sports, because, you know, I used to live in Colorado and it wasn't quite Pacific, but it's a mountain that's just 1 hour ahead. On the one hand, it's nice because you don't have to stay up late to watch a lot of the East Coast games. But on the other hand, you know, you have the Super Bowl starting at like 4 in the afternoon, and that just seems too early for anything like that to start. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Here's my other fear is, I mean, obviously I'm a Nationals fan. Those games, 50% of them start at 7 o'clock East Coast time. That's 4 o'clock West Coast time.
I mean, that's outrageous.
I like to get away with checking baseball scores at work, but this is going to get aggressive. That's not to say I'm going to stop, but it's going to require a little work on my end, and you know how I feel about work.
Yeah, I mean, it's like 10 a.m. and Bryce Harper's leading off, did you see that he was leading off this week?
I did. He's done well with it. So I'm happy, not happy with the Nationals record after April, but I'm happy with Bryce.
Well, let's use that to segue into our first topic here, off the bench. I know, Pete, you had some baseball stuff you wanted to talk about. So what's the first thing we should talk about?
I think we have to talk about our biggest surprises and disappointments after one full month of baseball in the books. So, I have a feeling you're going to want to talk about Mookie Betts. I'm going to talk about Didi Gregorius.
Oh, go for it. Yeah, you start.
So Didi, who we knew the Yankees were going to have a good year. I mean, they are sitting in second place right now. We knew that the Yankees and Red Sox would compete. I really didn't expect the Red Sox to compete in the offensive categories like they have. We knew they'd be good, but boy, offensively, they've been fantastic. But I think one of the biggest heroes on the Yankees lineup is not Aaron Judge. It's not Giancarlo Stanton. They're both having good starts. But Didi Gregorius, and you know where he's doing it? Is it not swinging the baseball bat? I mean, he's doing great things on offense, but I think the biggest example of how much he's improved, 18 walks already this year after 1 month of baseball. You know how many walks he had last year altogether? 25 walks. That was it in over 500 plate appearances. This year, 18 walks already. So we're seeing a great patience from Didi Gregorius. He's playing well on the field. Obviously, his offensive numbers when he does swing the bat, that was a little hyperbole, but when he does swing the bat are still fantastic. I think he's one of the unsung heroes. And my other unsung hero, Charlie Morton of the Astros. We knew that Astros rotation would be good. Charlie Morton right now sitting on a 4-0 record, 1.72 ERA, 0.98 whip. And if you're watching his games, his fastballs, every one of them seems to be 97, 98. I mean, that Astros rotation is clicking right now. And I think we knew Justin Verlander would be solid. We knew Dallas Keuchel would be solid. How about Charlie Morton and everything he's doing? He's a free agent at the end of this year. How much would you like to be Charlie Morton's agent right now? Because they're going to show you the money.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think I have to mention using your Charlie Morton point as a jumping off point for me. Patrick Corbin in Arizona. The Diamondbacks, and when you're talking about surprises of the season, so far for me, National League West, the Diamondbacks surging to a 7-game lead on the Dodgers. The Dodgers underperforming, Corey Seager now having to undergo Tommy John surgery, out for the rest of the season. The Diamondbacks have opened up a sizable lead here that, honestly, at this point, Pete, I'm not sure that the Dodgers can make up the ground. It's going to be, I think it's going to be an uphill climb for the Dodgers to do that.
Yeah, I agree. So if you're the Dodgers, I totally agree on the Diamondbacks. So there's a couple interesting shortstops out there on the market. Manny Machado comes to mind. You think if the Dodgers make a move to try to replace Corey Seager, who I actually thought was going to be the key to the Dodgers having finally that World Series winning season.
Right.
Do you think that can make up anything, or are they just down and out in so many different ways that this is going to be a bad year in LA?
So the Dodgers already have a lot of money on their payroll, and if they want to stay under the luxury tax and they're really serious about that, I don't think they can afford Machado. Now, there's a scenario in which they surrender a ton of prospects and the Orioles agree to keep some of Machado's salary for salary relief for the Dodgers. But in order to do that, the Dodgers would, like I said, have to give up a ton of prospects. And that's not really been Andrew Friedman's MO since he got to Los Angeles, or even really since he was in Tampa Bay. So I don't see it happening. I think the cost is way too high. I think especially now in May, as opposed to July 31st, it's just going to take way more than Friedman's comfortable giving away to the Orioles if they wanted Machado to play in Los Angeles. So it's a tough situation. The Seager injury, I don't see Machado as the answer there.
Fair. Yeah. What a surprise in LA. I mean, a bad April is not the end of the world. A lot of teams have bad Aprils. I mean, I'm thinking kind of like the mid-2000 Yankees. I'm thinking of the 2015 Giants. I mean, who kind of figure out a way to turn it on. But man, there's just like nothing to turn on in Los Angeles right now. It's not good baseball out there in Los Angeles right now. That's really all I can say about that.
Yeah, totally agree. I also, though, have to mention Mookie Betts, which I know you saw me tweeting about this earlier. But Mookie just had a 3-home run day today, and this is actually the fourth time he's done it. There are only a handful of players, 7 to be exact, who have done that more times, who have had 5 or 6 3-home run games in their career. Sammy Sosa is the all-time leader with 6 of those, but Mookie Betts at age 25 already has 4 of them. And more than that, Mookie's actually one of only 2 players. The other one's a guy named Johnny Mize, who has had 2 3-home run games in 2 different seasons. So he did this in 2016 and he did this in 2018. And again, it's only May, and May 2nd at that. Yeah. So if Mookie does this again, that would put him in the ranks of Sammy Sosa, obviously in a different, the juiced man era, the steroid era. Sammy Sosa is the only other guy who's had 3 3-home run games in 1 season. So if Mookie can do that, that would be pretty impressive. But I mean, you mentioned Didi Gregorius and his offensive numbers. Mookie's been right up there as well. I saw a stat earlier today that Mookie has 22 extra base hits and only 13 strikeouts on the whole season. So where baseball is moving in the, I guess we could call it sort of the Aaron Judge direction, the 2 true outcomes, you're either hitting a home run or you're striking out, you're knocking the top off the ball, or you're going down swinging. Mookie's, I think, an exception, and a really fun exception to watch because he doesn't strike out. His K rate this year is below 12%. His walk rate is identical to that. So it would be nice if he walked a little bit more, but at the same time, he's hitting 337, 431, 717, which is absolutely outrageous. He's already accumulated almost 2 Fangraphs WAR. His WRC plus is 202 when 100 is average. So if you want a fun player to watch, I think you can't go wrong with Mookie. You can't go wrong with Didi. Those two guys in Boston and New York are just doing really, really fun things right now.
So we're down 1 month of baseball. Boston has had a mediocre 5-5 over the last 10 games, and I say that jokingly because otherwise the Red Sox have been fantastic. What did I see? They've got 2.5 on the Yankees right now is what I saw. But either way, it's a race. We thought it would be a race. We took the Yankees to win that race. A lot of season left, but are you still confident in the Yankees taking that, or are you willing to change your prediction right now here the first week of May?
I'm not willing to change my prediction. I do think the Yankees catch them. The Red Sox obviously got off to a scorching start, and it was a lot of fun to watch. But I think ultimately you have to go with the Yankees lineup catching the Red Sox lineup. The Red Sox are doing well. Obviously, they're overperforming expectations. JD Martinez has been no slacker for them since he came in to fill the DH role. I just talked about how amazing Mookie Betts is. A lot of young, fun talent on that team. But at the end of the day, you're looking at a Yankees team that is absolutely stacked. You know, a team that can play Judge and Stanton, the two home run leaders for the entire major leagues last year, in the same outfield. I mean, that type of depth is unprecedented. And for Mookie Betts being on the Red Sox, there's Didi Gregorius on the Yankees, like we talked about. So the Yankees just find themselves absolutely stacked. You know, we didn't even talk about Gary Sanchez there. Yeah. You know, a lot of it does, I think, come down to pitching, and we talked about that in our league preview. But ultimately, I see the Yankees winning out this race. Right now, as I speak, they're actually up on the Astros 3-0 in the top of the sixth, and Stanton hit a home run in that game. So I think the Yankees will ultimately catch the Red Sox. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I still have the Yankees edging out the Red Sox. I said back in our prediction shows I had the Yankees at 95 wins, the Red Sox at 90. I don't know if I'm willing to stick to both of those numbers, but I'm still willing to say Yankees 1, Red Sox 2. It's going to be a 2-3 game race when it comes down to it. I think the Red Sox are absolutely a wild card team right now. So I think it's going to be fun in the AL East. Even though it's a very top-heavy division, it's going to be fun.
Yeah, you know, we didn't even mention Gleyber Torres, who the Yankees called up, but he is the real deal as far as prospects go, and right now is playing second base for them, could slide over to play third. So another thing to watch, I think another addition to the Yankees roster that could put them over the edge in the head-to-head race with the Red Sox. So
yeah, so those are your positives, but it's been a weird first month of baseball. We've seen, what, like 10 weather outs, and not for rain, but for snow or for cold. We've seen just some bizarre stuff in baseball.
It's not how it should be, Pete.
Yeah, it's spring has not necessarily sprung in about 10 major league cities right now. Any negatives after your first month? Any disappointments or things that have stood out to you in a bad way?
Well, look, it's not a disappointment, but we already talked about, I mean, because I'm not a Dodgers fan, I mean, it's a disappointment to see Corey Seager go down with an injury. That's obviously devastating. Similarly for Travis Darnaud, the Mets catcher, same thing. He needs Tommy John surgery. So those things are disappointments, and I feel sympathy for the players involved. It's not really I'm not personally disappointed that the Dodgers are underperforming. I think it's part of what makes baseball interesting. This is always a largely predictable sport, but also very unpredictable, and it makes it fun. But I think the Dodgers underperformance is the big thing that I would say now. And you already mentioned the Nats underperformance. I think that's been a big surprise, but the Nats have been largely unlucky too. So I think you can take heart, Pete. I think we'll see them slowly be able to crawl out of that hole. Whether or not they can make up the ground on the Mets, maybe even the Braves, something else. And then the final thing, keeping on that point, the Braves have been fantastic. And their two prospects, Albies and Acuña, are just awesome, really good. It's fun to see the Braves kind of ahead of schedule on their rebuild here. As much as I hate to say that as a guy who grew up as an NL East Phillies guy, and I know you can sympathize as a Nats dude, it's tough to see the Braves doing this, but it's also fun as a fan of the game, seeing these really young guys, young talent come in and supercharge a franchise that really kind of needs some supercharging.
Yeah, honestly, it's no fun when we have multiple teams that could be competing for 100 losses, which I think this year we probably have the Reds, who have already fired their manager and gone to Jim Riggleman. I think the Royals are in the danger zone, absolutely, and I think the Marlins are in danger. So I think it's good to have teams like the Braves, who we weren't projecting, kind of coming up. So you brought up the Braves. I would say if I'm looking at number two teams across their respective divisions, big surprises to me right now, Braves, Pirates, and Tigers all sitting as number twos. So I think you're in agreement with me that the Braves are the most real team of those three. Anyone else you think real, or is this just 1 month of good matchups for these clubs?
Yeah, I think 1 month of good matchups. I think we'll see the Pirates fall back. They don't even have Gerrit Cole anymore. And the Tigers, same thing. The Tigers are just depleted of talent. JD Martinez left 2 years ago in free agency. Miggy is certainly on the backside of his career. I think we'll just see them slowly slip into irrelevance as the season goes on as well.
Yeah, I agree. Too much too much movement in that Pirates organization right now. They've had a good month, but they're not going to be able to sustain right now. But I think they're also ahead of schedule, which is bad as an offseason as they had for Pirates fans. I think they can take heart that Clint Hurdle has figured out a way to make something honestly out of nothing.
Yeah, I think you're right. Should we move on to NFL?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Let's jump to the main event after last week. I think we can agree.
Yeah, so we had this episode mock draft last week, and we were very upfront in saying we did not think that this was actually how the draft would go. It was, I guess you could probably say, Pete, more of a thought exercise, right? In terms of like what could happen if teams made these choices. And I put the hat of John Dorsey on as the Browns GM and made a first and fourth pick that I'd really seen in no other mock drafts that we'd done, but I still think they would have left the Cleveland Browns in a better spot. We also heard from Kevin, a listener on Anchor. He messaged us, left an audio message, said he enjoyed the mock draft episode. So shout out to Kevin. Thanks for your feedback. He said he was looking forward to hearing some draft reactions. So that's what we're doing right now. Pete, let me throw this question to you. What's your immediate reaction? What's the one event or the one takeaway that jumps out at you thinking about last Thursday's first round draft?
Oh, a lot of things stand out to me. Obviously, Baker Mayfield was a surprise, but let me tell you what I was probably most surprised by, and that was really some teams' decisions to skip going with a quarterback overall, like the Broncos, and I think the Broncos are probably a good discussion for us after this that we could spend a little time on.
Sure.
But teams like the Bills going after Josh Allen, I think that is the one that surprised me the most. The Bills trading up for Josh Allen. Yes, he was falling based on some really, really bad tweets that he made as a high schooler that mysteriously, I'm putting up air quotes right now if anyone can see that, mysteriously showed up about 48 hours before the draft to hurt his draft stock. I don't really know what the Bills were thinking. I think they gave up way too much for that on a very unproven quarterback, but I think they had a solid draft behind Josh Allen. I really don't like that pick in Buffalo right now, and that surprised me in a very bad way. The Bills are consistently making bad decisions at the quarterback position. We knew that Tyrod was not the quarterback of the future for them, and that's okay. But remember how they were all in on kind of the next man up, and that's what they were building a franchise around? Then they go out and they give up a ton, and they're going to have to pay Josh Allen way too much for him to be sitting as a backup. He's going to have to start within the first 6 weeks in Buffalo.
Yeah.
The fans are going to demand it, and the team is going to be mediocre this year, and they're going to have to do this. So I think the Bills set themselves back more than they set themselves up.
All right, so it's game one in Buffalo. You can start AJ McCarron, Josh Allen, or Nathan Peterman, the guy who threw,
Five picks, 17 interceptions
in a game last season. Who are you starting of those three? It's a hard question, right?
I'd start AJ McCarron. There's
no obviously good answer to me, but I would also go McCarron. And, this is crazy to me. The way to break down a top 10 quarterback selection like the Bills grabbing Josh Allen at 7 is very simple. If you can't answer the question, are you prepared to start him game one next year, then why are you spending a top 10 pick on him?
And I don't think they had a lot of great options besides Josh Allen at quarterback. But how do you take Josh Allen over Josh Rosen?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Josh really Rosen like is still on the board. How about Lamar Jackson?
But
I mean, there are other guys on that board who I think are way better than Josh Allen. And you and I talked about this last week. Josh Allen has almost identical stats to Christian Hackenberg. And when you watch the footwork in the pocket, he looks like Christian Hackenberg. And when you watch how he has a really strong arm but absolutely zero accuracy even when he has a clean pocket, he's Christian Hackenberg. And the Bills have Christian Hackenberg now coming to them, and it's going to end the same way that the Christian Hackenberg saga has ended, although it's technically, I guess, still ongoing, but it ended in New York. He's not going to be a starting NFL quarterback for any length of time.
Yeah. You look at some of these other teams, again, like the Broncos, I think you could argue like the Patriots, where after those first three quarterbacks came off the board, there was no one else worth mortgaging the farm on like the Bills did for Josh Allen.
Right.
It just seems like they set themselves back because they felt like they had to take a quarterback. They didn't take the quarterback of the future. They took the quarterback of now because they felt like they needed a quarterback because they traded away Tyrod Taylor because he didn't fit that system, and the Bills are going to pay for it.
I think you're totally right. Can I ask you a different question, different player?
Yeah, please.
So you're an NFC East guy as a Deadskins fan. So
I'm sorry, but sorry, not sorry.
So you, as I have seen a lot of New York Giants games over the years.
Yeah.
The New York Giants selected Saquon Barkley at number two. Saquon Barkley is near and dear to my heart as a guy who is a Penn State fan, and I think he is the most talented runner by far in this class. I think he's possibly a generational talent as a runner, but I was surprised that the Giants picked him at two. Now, I know that was kind of the majority of the chatter. I thought that was chaff. I thought the Giants were going to go in there and draft a Bradley Chubb to bolster their defensive line. So what do you think about the Barkley selection at two? Obviously, it opened up Chubb for a later team, and we'll talk about that. But what do you think specifically about the Barkley selection at two? Does this match or fit with your draft philosophy?
No. So if you're the Giants, that pick to me read as, one, I'm not willing to take the chance on anything except a surefire pick, which honestly is okay for a top five first round draft pick. Like, you can't mess that one up because that is such a defining moment for a franchise.
Sure.
Because hopefully it only comes around every decade or so. But if you're the Giants, I think you are still trying to grovel at Eli Manning's feet and remind Eli that he is your franchise. You have just committed by not getting a quarterback here when there were still so many quarterbacks of talent on the board. You've just committed to the fact that Eli's your guy for another 2 to 3 years, because it's way too early to project the college football season this year. But who in college football are we projecting coming out of this class to be a quarterback on the same level as either Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, heck, Josh Rosen? Even we aren't projecting anyone right now, and someone will surprise us. But at the same time, you're saying that you are okay sticking with Eli Manning for another 2 to 3 years, or you're going to trade for him and sacrifice something else on your team to make that work, maybe future draft picks. It seemed like a kick the can down the road, try to keep Eli happy for another year. I don't know if Manning had a part in this, but this seemed like a cowardly move to go with a safe pick instead of a pick that could revitalize your franchise.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate. I'll take it from the other side, though, and say, you know, maybe New York just didn't like what they saw in this crop of quarterbacks. And honestly, I'm kind of with them. I'm not sold on any of them being stars, so I'm not sure that I'd be super comfortable drafting any of them at number two. But with that said, I also am of the opinion that you shouldn't draft a running back at number two, because the longevity is just not going to be there for you to get the value on this number two pick. Bill Barnwell, if you're interested in the sort of economics of this, Bill Barnwell last week, I think on Wednesday morning on ESPN, had a great long article on exactly why this is the case, that a running back shouldn't really ever be taken number two, because you're just not going to get the years of value out of them that you can in a quarterback for 14 years, or even an offensive lineman, you know, a Joe Thomas type who can give you 10,000 snaps at the position and provide that sort of longevity and that relatively constant value over a long period of time. So, you know, if you're the Giants, I don't see how it makes sense to get a running back. If you're not comfortable selecting anybody at that number two position, then at least offer it up and try to trade back in the round and collect more draft capital later. I don't know, maybe even a couple first round picks. And you know, maybe that could have happened actually, Pete, because I don't know if you saw the report today, but Mayfield's agent is saying that if Mayfield was available at number two, the Patriots were going to try to trade up, potentially trading their 23 and 31 to number two to get Mayfield. Do you think there's any truth to this?
I think the discussions were going on. I don't know if you saw, there's also a quote out of Tom Brady this week when he asked if Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick appreciate him, and he was very, very coy about his answer. I think that there is still some trouble brewing in New England, and I I really and truly believe, because there was chatter weeks ago that New England was looking to trade up in the draft to make themselves competitive for a quarterback. But I've also seen rumors that they were talking to the Browns until the Browns committed to Baker Mayfield.
Right.
So I think that there are too many areas where the Patriots were talking. Who knows how serious they were. But I think it's safe to say that Bill Belichick, who always gets rid of talent a year before they're done, is now thinking that he has 1 to 2 years left of Tom Brady.
Yeah. Tops. Well, I mean, let's connect the dots here, because that's a great point you brought up. So there's this chatter pre-draft, right? Is Brady coming back? What type of friction? Ever since that Seth Wickersham article last fall, you know, what kind of friction is there between Belichick and Kraft and Brady? They all want to take more credit than they deserve for the, you know, they want to take the lion's share of responsibility for New England's dynasty, yada, yada, yada. And then there's these reports coming out pre-draft that say, you know, by the way, Brady's still not committed to coming back next year. There is this friction between him and Belichick. Maybe he won't do it. You know, Giselle wants him to retire. But then post-draft, the Patriots don't get a quarterback. And then all of a sudden, oh, what a coincidence. Brady says he's back now. So, you know, was he holding out because he wanted to see if the Patriots actually did believe in him, or, you know, if they had in a hypothetical alternate universe, if they had drafted Mayfield, would Brady have said, peace, I'm out?
Yeah, great question. There's no harder organization to analyze than the New England Patriots.
Yeah.
I really, most other organizations, you can kind of get them at face value. Not the Patriots.
Well, let's talk about one more organization. So I heard from a listener over the weekend who specifically asked us to talk about the Denver Broncos draft. And I actually think that's a great draft to talk about. And I know we're almost out of time, Pete, so I don't want to spend too much time on this. But I do just want to provide a hot take here on the Denver Broncos draft. And I don't know if you'll agree, Pete, but I think the Broncos have quietly put together what is perhaps, based on a wonderful gift from the Browns, and I'll explain in just a moment, what is perhaps the best draft class from the 2018 NFL draft. So hear me out on this. Round one, number five overall, they pick up Bradley Chubb. Now, why'd they get Bradley Chubb? Because the Browns passed on the best pass rusher in the class when they took a cornerback at number four. So what I was saying earlier about these positions that are just not worth the high draft picks, cornerback is another one of those positions. But I digress. So the Browns make a, you know, not a bad pick in terms of Denzel Ward's a great athlete, but a bad pick for the draft capital they have at the number four spot. They pick Denzel Ward, someone who's projected to be a mid first round pick, and they pass on Chubb. So then Chubb is sitting there when the Broncos are on the clock. And what do they think? Well, they think we have Von Miller, one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. What if we put the best pass rusher in this class on the opposite side of him, and we can really wreak havoc on the quarterback? So that's a no-brainer. So they get Bradley Chubb. That's a win for them in the first round. Round two, they get Courtland Sutton. Now, I know people are talking DJ Moore, Calvin Ridley. Both of those guys went in the first round. But if you go look at Courtland Sutton's tape, he doesn't quite have the top-shelf speed. But I would say he reminds me of Julio Jones. He's tall. He wins the jump ball. He's an incredible route runner. And if you look at his mock draftable spider chart, he is an incredible athlete. We're talking like 85 and 90th percentile in just about everything except for the 40. So again, what I said about the top shelf speed. But I think Courtland Sutton's actually the top receiver in this class. And they got him in round two at 40. So that's a huge value. Move to round three, Royce Freeman, running back from Oregon. I've been watching Royce Freeman since he was an 18-year-old true freshman in Oregon. This dude is like one of the most like locomotive type runners who can also make quick cuts, and he's a ton of fun to watch. Super durable. And then Isaac Yiadom, cornerback from Boston College, who's a really good corner, and they need to bolster that because of the loss of Aqib Talib in the offseason. They also picked up Josie Jewell in the fourth round. I don't know much about him, but Deshaun Hamilton, another wide receiver out of Penn State, and he is really shifty, always finds ways to get open. I think he's small, so I think he'll be a great slot receiver, but I think he has huge upside there and definitely great value for the fourth round. And then in the fifth round, Troy Fumagalli, tight end from Wisconsin. And if you've seen any Wisconsin tape, Fumagalli has been one of their stars for years, and I think also has tremendous upside. So those are kind of the highlights from the Denver Broncos draft. And to our listener who was asking about this class, Skyler, I think you are, I think you're in for a treat with the Broncos this year. If Vance Joseph can do anything, and that's kind of the big question, he didn't do much last year. So maybe there's a coaching change that needs to happen in Denver. But I think the exciting thing is the talent core is there. And Pete, I'll stop monologuing now about the Broncos and let you chip in with your thoughts.
So some great points. I don't think it was the best. I don't think it was one out of 32 in terms of best, but I think it had to have been top three. I think one other team that I'll mention here when we're done had a slightly better draft for a couple of different reasons. But I love the Denver Broncos picks this year. I think as you're looking at Bradley Chubb, if I can put him on the opposite end of Von Miller, excuse me, now we're starting to see that defense that looks a lot more like that 2015 team,
yeah,
who won the Super Bowl. Aside from losing Aqib Talib, it's not that different of a defense, to be honest. I really and truly believe that what the Denver Broncos are missing in order to keep that Super Bowl window open, unfortunately for their draft class this year, is a quarterback.
Yeah.
I think every other move they made was incredibly solid. And I buy that there was not a quarterback that they were willing to invest in, maybe with that five pick. And again, Chubb was absolutely the right pick for the Broncos there. The only thing I want to see out of the Broncos this year, though, was to take a solid but not dynamic quarterback in the second or third round. And I'm thinking I wanted to see them go with Mason Rudolph. I think watching the way Mason Rudolph played the game, yes, we talked about he was in very pass-friendly situations last year at Oklahoma State. I think he would have fit that Denver Broncos program perfectly. So that's my only disappointment with Denver. But overall, to almost every other one of your points, I think it was great. I think they now have the bruising runner that they've been missing for a while. I like that they got a solid number three, wide receiver. And overall, I just thought the little gaps that they were plugging with some of those late round picks, kind of in the mid 150s and on, I think they did very, very well. And so I give them actually my number three overall draft class this year. But yeah, Chubb falling to number five might have been the steal of the draft, I think, for the Broncos. And John Elway, he knows what he's doing, and he took it. So I was glad to see that. I root for the Broncos a lot.
So who would you say is the number one draft class?
You're not going to believe this, but I'm taking the Arizona Cardinals.
Oh, okay. Led by Josh Rosen, their quarterback of the future.
Exactly, which Josh Rosen really made me mad by talking about how there were nine mistakes made before him in the draft. Blah, 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 blah. Get over yourself, Josh. But the Cardinals needed a quarterback, and I thought Josh Rosen was not necessarily the number one quarterback in the draft, but I think we were in agreement that he was a solid two or three, depending on how you want to split hairs there.
Yeah.
So they got the quarterback they needed. Whether he'll do well in the NFL remains to be seen. I really like them getting Christian Clark, the wide receiver out of Texas A&M, and I really like that they bolstered their offensive line. The defense of the Cardinals, I think, could be a top five, top six defense this year. I don't think that defense has taken as many steps back as people think they have. Obviously, losing Bruce Arians is a big deal, and replacing his coaching expertise is not something you can do in the draft. But I thought the Arizona Cardinals actually had the best draft overall, most consistent based on where their picks were this year. I really like what they did.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly helped that the Broncos had a couple of third round selections to just, you know, get guys higher in the draft, and the Cardinals did not have that luxury. So, but yeah, I mean, I think the Cardinals did a good job with the draft capital they had. I like Christian Kirk a lot. He was picked up seven slots after Cortland Sutton, who the Broncos picked up. So it's possible they were waiting on Sutton and just couldn't get him because the Broncos nabbed him first. But I think Christian Kirk has a lot of upside. And I'm a big Rosen fan. You know, I think he's got some things to learn in terms of when to speak up and when to not. But he has a lot of talent on the field. If he can stay healthy, I think he'll be a difference maker.
That's a theme with pretty much every quarterback in the draft this year.
Yeah, and you know who would think that these 21-year-old kids are not ready to handle the burdens of being, you know, $20 million quarterbacks?
Yeah, hard to believe.
Hard to believe.
Who's your biggest loser coming out of this draft, if I may ask?
Biggest loser coming out of this draft.
You can't just say the Deadskins, by the way. You can't do it. I'm putting my foot down on this one.
Yeah. Okay. So you're looking
it's a valid point, but.
So you're looking for a team that is the biggest loser as opposed to
what team kind of walked out of here with a ugh factor after that draft?
Yeah, okay. So let me,
and that is a technical term.
So I think that I would say in terms of players. So I was thinking you were asking about players. I would say Sam Bradford, who was, you know, dumped by the Vikings to go to the Cardinals, and he will be supplanted by Josh Rosen. Very quickly, I think, in the season, because Bradford is made of glass, and he just won't survive very long, I don't think. So I think, let's see, as far as the biggest loser in the draft for a team, I would say the Redskins, but since you told me I can't do that.
Can't do it.
I don't know. Let's go with the Saints. Yeah, I think I'll go with the Saints.
Okay.
And I think I'll say that just because, so first of all, I had really high expectations because of their amazing draft last year, where they picked up Alvin Kamara in the third round, and that's just indicative of their other fantastic picks that they made. But in this case, they went way up. They paid a super hefty price for Davenport, Marcus Davenport, defensive end. Drafted him at 14th in the first round, and to do that, they gave up next year's first round pick. And Davenport is a solid defensive lineman. He's a run stuffing lineman, though. He's not a pass rusher. And I think the way the modern NFL is going, you need pass rushers. You need to generate pressure on the quarterback. So to give up that much draft capital just to get a guy who's a run stuffing defensive lineman, not great. Not great. And they lost Willie Snead, but they didn't do much to make up for that. They picked up a third round receiver, Tre'Quan Smith. And they passed on Lamar Jackson. When they traded up with that first round pick next year, I was almost positive they were getting Lamar Jackson. And I was a bit confused. Same. Because, you know, Jackson he's a different, player than Breeze as far as his style. So I was a little bit confused about how that tutelage and sort of handoff would work over the next couple of years, but I thought they were hiring the Rodgers to the Favre, right? And they didn't do that. They went and got Davenport. I was very confused after they selected him. So I'm going to say that the Saints are the losers. What about you?
I think that's valid. Real quick, the end of Flacco is what Lamar Jackson meant to the Ravens, which I think is kind of hilarious. Yeah. I'm not a Joe Flacco fan that he's elite, but just had to throw
he's
that
not
in
elite.
There.
There's no way.
No way. Cost the Ravens 5 years with one contract.
You know, so I'm a big Carson Wentz fan, obviously, but I've stopped mentioning Joe Flacco in the list of FCS quarterbacks who have made it in the NFL because he's terrible.
What Super Bowl winning quarterback who was a true starter has disappeared more than Joe Flacco?
That's a great question.
But sorry. I just had to throw that in there because I love the Joe Flacco elite debate. My biggest loser, since I wouldn't let you take the Redskins, I'm going to go with another NFC East opponent, the Dallas Cowboys.
Yes.
What did they do in this draft? What did they do? They lose Dez Bryant. They don't get a wide receiver. Jason Witten announces he's retiring 24 hours before the draft. They don't get a tight end. What did the Dallas Cowboys do this year other than just get middle-of-the-road offensive linemen and linebackers? What did they do? Nothing. And I love it. I love it. I hate Dallas, so I'm good. I probably shouldn't have gotten that emotional right now, but I was really, really surprised. I think the Cowboys really and truly wanted that tight end that your Eagles picked up. I can't remember his
Dallas
last name.
Goddard, but
his first name is Dallas. Yep. I think they really wanted him. And I think when David Akers came out in his little squeaky voice and grenaded that entire plan for the Cowboys, I think it shell-shocked them. But I thought the Dallas Cowboys walked out of here looking bad this year, which was so interesting since it was in their house.
Yeah. I think there's not much I can argue there. Yeah. We are just about out of time, Pete. I think we should probably do some garbage time real quick. So we haven't talked NBA yet.
Now, heart of the playoffs.
Do you think the Cavs will make it to the finals?
The conference finals or the NBA finals?
We'll talk. But I was referring to the NBA finals, but we'll talk conference finals as well.
No on the NBA finals. Yes, they'll make it to the Eastern Conference finals to play your Sixers.
Okay,
yes.
So you're predicting a Sixers win in the Eastern Conference Finals. I love it. We'll just end the discussion there. We'll go with that.
Oh, good talk.
Yeah, I you know, you can never count a LeBron team out, and he showed that with the way he closed out the series with the Pacers. He's shown that thus far in round two. We'll see what happens, but I don't know. I'm a little nervous after game one, Sixers Celtics in round two, so hopefully they can turn on the Jets from here on out.
That was something. What voodoo magic did LeBron put on that rim in Toronto?
Oh my goodness.
For 9 different tip-ins not to go in. That was insane. Yeah. If that wasn't the karma of Drake consistently talking trash on the
player,
I don't know what is. Like, Toronto, get a new homer to put courtside. Go call Jack Nicholson. He doesn't go to the LA Laker games anymore.
There you go.
Like, get him.
Yeah.
Get someone who's fun but not detrimental to your team. Right. I blame last night on Drake.
That is fair. That is definitely fair. They could get Justin Bieber, another famous Canadian.
Oh, then your karma might get worse. I hate to break it to you.
All right. Well, Pete, I think that's all we've got time for. Any closing thoughts before we sign off here?
No. Another great week in sports. It's a night off for my Caps right now. Tom Wilson got a 3-game suspension for some dirty hits. So we got to do a little recovery in Washington. So I'm glad to be talking to you tonight, not watching more penalty box time.
Hey, when you get to Vegas, are you going to shift allegiances to the Golden Knights from the Caps?
Well, then I got an East Coast and a West Coast team. So I think I can stick with them both. Again, the time zone is going to kill me on trying to watch any Caps hockey games. Yeah. So fortunately, you and I have been all in on the Golden Knights this year.
All
so
in.
At least we're not bandwagon fans, right? I mean, the bandwagon didn't exist when we started talking about them. We had the Vegas flu before, we're driving the tractor
that's pulling the bandwagon.
Oh, love it. Let's update the third string logo to show that.
Yeah, we'll just have like little caricatures of you and me driving a tractor pulling a Vegas Golden Knights bandwagon. I love it. I'll talk to my graphics guys.
Yeah, please do. I'm sure they don't have anything to do this week.
No, definitely not.
Let's get right on that.
All right, well, we'll wrap it up there with images of me and Pete driving a tractor pulling a Vegas Knights bandwagon. Thanks so much for listening to Third String Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Third String Pod, me at Zach Crippen, and Pete at Pete_Laclede. You can also reach us, Zach at VernacularPodcast.com or Pete at VernacularPodcast.com. Let us know what you think of this episode. You can reach out any one of those ways. You can also just drop us a line in the Anchor app directly. Leave us a voice message like Kevin did this week. Thanks again for that, Kevin. In the meantime, until next time, thanks for listening to Third String Podcast.